I'm Melanie Howard, and I serve as the Women's Philanthropy Chair. On behalf of Jewish Nevada and our incredible Women's Philanthropy Council, I want to thank you for choosing to spend your morning with us, grounding, stretching, breathing, and connecting. I would like to extend a special thank you to Jillian Potashnik, Women's Philanthropy Outreach Chair. Thank you for driving this event forward. My friend Jillian is a warrior in this fight against terror and anti-Semitism. From the onset of 10/7 to the rise of anti-Semitism in our own community, Jillian has led her life with fierce confidence and pride in Judaism that has never wavered. She continuously inspires me to put on my star when I go out, engage in Jewish dialogue in public freely, and to speak up when something's not right. In these challenging times, making space for renewal and community is more important than ever. This morning is about filling our cups, both physically and spiritually, and I can't think of a better way to do that than with the incredible Shauna Meyerson. Shauna is the founder of Yoga of War podcast, and her work speaks directly to the heart of what it means to be an advocate, a leader, and a resilient Jewish woman. We are so lucky to have her here with us today and to share her wisdom and energy. To help us dive deeper into Shauna's story and spark some meaningful conversation, I'm thrilled to welcome our amazing Women's Philanthropy Outreach Chair, Jillian Potashnik, to kick off our fireside Q&A. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jillian.
And there is no actual fire. Somebody actually asked me that. I was like, no, it's not.
Let me know in the right
video. Yeah. All right, let's start with the video chat.
Might as well not interrupt.
In case you haven't watched it, we sent the link on an email, but here it is.
Hopefully.
Facts matter. Words matter. Jews matter. And I stand with Israel forever. I'm Shauna Meyerson, host of the Yoga of War podcast. In a world where so many people are afraid to speak up, I'm here to be your voice. With an inspiring lineup of brilliant guests, we will help you to defend the Jewish state and fight anti-Semitism with truth, logic, and powerful insight.
In becoming more powerful and more able to defend your own people, you naturally lose sympathy.
Superman, 20 years after the concert from New York, playing at Hoxha Square, in a way was kind of a full circle for that song.
We know where this leads.
The Iron Dome is as open of a miracle as the splitting of the sea was.
Warfare against Israel is unfortunately not a new concept.
Now is the time to also rise for Jewish civil rights.
Hamas doesn't use human shields. It uses human sacrifice.
It's about some kind of deep hatred of Jews.
I don't think any country in the world would respond differently to how Israel has.
It's time to stand strong. Stand smart. And stand together. Am Yisrael Chai.
Thank you for that. And now we all know what Jewish yoga is. So, it's like a sermon and we do movement.
That's great.
So thank you for our yoga class. Shauna Meyerson is a Los Angeles-based yoga influencer and a world-renowned creator of Yoga Athletica and mini yogis for kids. She has been teaching yoga since 2002, but has been an advocate for Israel and the Jewish people even longer than that. Is this okay?
Yeah.
We're in? All right. A member of the elite World Jewish Congress Jewish Diplomatic Corps and Israel Bonds National Women's Board and AIPAC, Israel and Judaism are the cornerstones of her life. After the atrocities of October 7, Shauna put her professional career on hold in order to advocate full time for the Jewish people and the Jewish state. In July 2024, she launched what we just saw, the Yoga of War podcast. So 1 year, happy birthday.
We just shot our 60th episode.
I love that. Mazel tov. Where she has had the distinct honor and pleasure of having proactive, inspiring, educational, and important conversations with many of the world's most prominent pro-Israel voices. And it has been the honor of a lifetime for her. Since then, she also launched a second weekly podcast, because, you know, one wasn't enough, A Paratrooper and a Yogi Walk into a Bar, co-hosted with legendary war historian Andrew Fox. So I want everyone to get out your phones and follow her Instagram right now. If you're not, it's Yoga Athletica.
You can spell it.
Actually, the podcast itself is not on Instagram. It's on YouTube. So if you want to see
But you put links to it on from your Instagram.
Yeah, I've got links everywhere. We don't have to worry about that right now. I have cards that have a QR code and everything.
Perfect. Oh, okay.
But yeah, the two podcasts have been just so incredible. And the funniest thing is that, I mean, I've really had the top speakers, pro-Israel speakers on earth on the show. And every single time one of them says yes, I'm like, really? So it's been really amazing.
Well, you're getting on to that, because how did the podcast get started?
So the way the podcast got started, it is a little bit of a funny story, actually. So the very first episode wasn't a podcast at all. And before I describe the podcast, let me just say that, so I am a yoga influencer. I have about 55,000 followers on YouTube. And when I started broadcasting about Israel, I want you guys to know that, if you don't already, that the yoga community is as far left as it can. So you guys could draw your own conclusions about what that means, about how they feel about Israel, okay? I decided that I was going to use my platform, rather than starting a new podcast, I was going to speak directly to the people who were telling me that I should go die because I'm a genocidal baby killer from the world of love and light. You gotta love that. So I put it right on my Yoga Athletica YouTube channel, and that's where you'll find it now on your podcast. So it started with just a two-hour Zoom after I went on a mission to Israel last May, to the south, right? Like, so to see all the things. How many people have been back since 10/7? It's so important. We're going to talk about that later, hopefully, because we have to bear witness. So I did 2 hours explaining. We were actually at Vili on Yom HaZiharon, where anybody who knows that that's Memorial Day in Israel, when the siren goes off and the whole country literally stops everything that they're doing, which is amazing. So I did this 2-hour Zoom Q&A on my YouTube, and then I'm like, okay, I did a philosophy one, which we'll talk about in a minute, and then, this is funny, I was actually on Instagram and I had reposted something from John Spencer. Do you guys know who John Spencer is? Okay, so John Spencer is the head of urban warfare studies at West Point. He is the single most prominent urban warfare expert in America. And he has proven time and time and time again that Israel, the IDF, is they're the most humane military, not only on Earth today, but in the history of military. Andrew Fox, who I did a Paratrooper show with, is sort of his contemporary in England. So John had posted something, and I reposted it, and he's got literally millions of followers, but it was weird because it was in my chat, and I happened to be looking at it the second he wrote, like, thank you. And I'm like, oh my God, like, he just wrote it right now, and I'm looking at it, so I'm like, hi, right, or whatever, I'm like, and so we started chatting for quite a long time, I think an hour and a half, and then I said, I have this podcast.
But you didn't.
I didn't. I said, would you be willing to come on my podcast and talk about, you know, military morality? And he said, yes. And I'm like, wait, is this really
now
you?
I do a podcast.
No, I knew I could do it. I've been a public speaker my whole life. Before yoga, I was a public speaker for Microsoft, so I don't have a problem speaking. But I'm like, then I thought, maybe it's a fake account. There's so many fake accounts. I'm like, how do I know this is really you? He's like, it's me. I'm like, yeah, but how do I know? And so anyway, long story short, John was my first very gracious guest on the show. We've kept in touch. He doesn't know this yet, but I am hoping to have him back on for like a 1 year anniversary. We'll see what happens. He's one of the most sought after voices in the world right now when it comes to the IVF. So that's how it started.
Very cool. So what does yoga have to do with war?
So this is the question I get most often, and particularly from very, very angry yoga people. Like, how dare I put yoga and war in the same sentence? So anybody who knows like step A of yoga philosophy knows that there's this thing called ahimsa, okay? And ahimsa means nonviolence, okay? So that seems to sort of tell the whole story, right? War, nonviolence, they do not go together. It only tells half the story. Okay, because there's another very famous yoga text called the Bhagavad Gita that maybe some of you have heard of. Now I'm going to try to summarize this in just a couple of sentences. But the Bhagavad Gita, basically, two cousins go to war. Okay, one cousin attacks the other cousin unprovoked. And the other cousin, in the name of ahimsa, does not want to fight back. And I'm just going to say God. I'm going to just use some generic terms here. God says to Arjuna, the guy, you have to fight back. When it's an existential threat to you and your family, it is not your choice, but your responsibility to protect them. And this is also yoga. And to lie down and die is not ahimsa. And the interesting thing about this book is that the way the war ends, I'll just go ahead, spoiler alert, it's a very short book. The way it ends is that God says to Arjuna and his cousin, one of you is going to get these thousands of men and beasts to fight with you. They will be your army. And the other one is only going to get me. God, right? And like he likes Arjuna, so he's like, Arjuna, you get to pick first, right? And his cousin's like, that's not fair. Of course he's going to get, you know, the armies and the weapons and the... And of course, as we all know, or can guess, Arjuna chooses God and he wins. And I feel like this story is the story of Amisvaya. And so I purposely chose the name Yoga of War to be evocative and to raise eyebrows and so people would ask questions. Because to lie down and die, there is nothing noble in that.
Checking that the mic's gone.
The mic went out.
It's okay.
Yep, use your big voice.
We can hear you.
We can hear you.
Okay.
Sounds good. All right. Let's turn it off. So who has your favorite guest been to interview so far and why?
Okay, so this is like definitely the hardest question, because to say that I have loved every single one of my guests would be the understatement of the century. I think I annoy them so much because I want to be best friends with all of them. And I'm always trying, you know, I'm always keeping in touch with them and stuff. What I'm about to say is in no way to mitigate any one of my spectacular and unbelievable guests. But if I had to choose one and said, go home and watch this one now, it's actually one of the least watched ones. It's Sagi Dovev. And does anybody here know this name? So I've had so many like big illustrious names. Sagi is a guy who on October 7th went straight to Soroka Hospital. He was in the reserves to just help however he could. And when he saw what was happening there, he never left. So I'll tell you what he does in a second, but he has been supporting himself and his family with personal loans so that he can work every day of the week rehabilitating our soldiers. Now, what is he doing in rehab? This is what makes it so spectacular. He's a Krav Maga and martial arts expert, and he is taking soldiers who have lost 1, 2, 3, or even 4 limbs, and he is giving
back their pride and their strength and their sense of self. And he's turning them back into warriors. To listen to him speak, I can't, if there's an angel on earth, I'm telling you, it is Sagi Dovev. I've watched this episode myself numerous times because it's so overwhelming to me that every time he smiles, I just, he's Amisrael in a bottle, but this guy is a miracle worker beyond anything that you could imagine. He has saved more lives just by giving men back their dignity than you could imagine. Definitely someone that needs to be followed on Instagram, by the way. Unbelievable.
And I love that you bring to our attention some of the positive things that are happening in Israel as well, because it's so easy to just see on the news all of the negative stuff, and then we really get to know some of the people on your podcast that are doing really amazing things. And that's a good example of that one.
Yeah.
And I know some of us have experienced anti-Semitism personally. Say you're out in the real world and something happens, and we're kind of like deer in headlights when that happens. And then later you think, oh, I should have said this, this, and this, and this. So what is something that we can have in our back pocket, like ready to just say if we happen to experience something in the moment?
So first of all, every issue is going to be different. So I can't just say these three magic words, everything's going to go away. But the most important thing, what you said, the answer is in the question, which is that the answer comes to you later, okay? The answer is not going to come when you're a deer in the headlights, which means stop and think first and foremost before you answer, okay? That's the first thing. Second, this is the mantra I want you guys to remind yourselves of. This person feels like they're in their rights to say something mean, rude, anti-Semitic, vile. Why are they within their rights to say that kind of thing and you're not within your right to defend yourself? Okay? You have to understand that the narrative that is out there is so stacked against us, it does not make it any more right than Nazi Germany was right. Okay? You have not only the right, but the obligation to speak up for yourself. What's happening right now in the world is inexcusable. It's disgustable. It's a word now. And I think that too many Jews are sort of pushing it aside as insignificant. This is not insignificant, and we need to speak up. In World War II, we didn't have the choice, and we marched to our own death. We have to understand, as Jews, even in the diaspora, in Las Vegas, in Los Angeles, in New York, Sydney, London, name the city, that now Israel exists, we can defend ourselves, and we must defend ourselves. Do not lay down. If somebody says something that you know is wrong, first thing, stop and think. Second, know this. Whatever the enemy is accusing us of right now is what they are guilty of. I'm going to repeat that. Whatever allegations are being thrown at us is a complete inversion of reality right now. It is what they are guilty of. So, the easiest low-hanging fruit, if someone says something, is ask yourself, what is the opposite? Okay? For example, my sister came hysterical to me the other day that somebody said to her, Netanyahu never calls for a two-state solution. Okay? First of all, it's a false statement, but whatever. So I said, Rachel, you've got to think about the opposite. Now, there's, in this case, there were two opposites that are important. First, Name the Hamas figure who has ever, as in ever, anyone ever in Hamas who has asked for a two-state solution. The answer is none. Hamas exists solely to destroy the Jewish state, period. Read their charter. It's why they exist. So why are you asking if Netanyahu has said he wants a two-state solution, which he has? So the first thing is, you want to defend Hamas, tell me when they said they want a two-state solution. The second thing is, what's the opposite? A one-state solution. Has Netanyahu ever asked for a one-state solution? No. Okay? Then I got her the quotes or whatever. I mean, you can find them on Google. Like, it's not hard, but she was like in the middle of an argument, so she couldn't. I mean, she came home later and said, oh, I should have said something. So stop, think, know that it is your duty to defend yourself. Do not be embarrassed to defend yourself. You are worth defending, and we are worth defending, and human beings are worth defending. Okay? This isn't a Jewish issue, guys. This is a human issue. So let me ask you, Jillian, if someone came up to you and said, all black people should die, what would you say?
That's a horrible thing to say, and I disagree, and why would they think that?
Would you think of that after you got home, or would you meet? Okay, so how come when I say all Jews should die, all of a sudden you're like, I don't know what to say to that? Because we're afraid to defend ourselves. We are worthy of defending, just like every human being on earth is worthy of defending.
How about if somebody says something like this to us and saying, I hope you start to practice Sharia laws?
You can absolutely do that. So
I mean, this is the first thing that comes to my mind. I mean, okay, you're so against Judaism and so against, like, you know, our existence, so practice Sharia law.
I mean, you can absolutely say, there's a big argument in, do you know what you're defending?
They're fake.
Of course they don't.
Protesters are, most of them, they're fake.
Well, okay, we're not going to get into that. So right now, the answer is, don't be afraid to speak up for yourself. And if you're not sure, just switch out the word Jew for a black person, gay person, Hindu person, Christian person, but you would jump to that defense in a second. You got to stand up for yourself the same way that you would stand up for anybody else.
I have a question. A lot of people in kind of my circle will say it's not about you being Jewish, it's about the Israeli government that I'm again. And so that's a tough one,
okay,
because they're the ones that are colonizers. They're the ones that are, you know, raising Gaza and all this stuff. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, it's not about you. It's about Israel.
Okay.
So for me, my answer to that is there's no separation. I mean,
we are on Israel. But yeah. So here's the truth. Legitimate criticism of the Jewish state is legitimate and not anti-Semitic in nature, just because they're criticizing the government. The problem is that they're criticizing it on false claims. You use the word colonization. Israel is the ultimate decolonization program that has ever existed on earth. Israel is a nation that has been colonized over and over and destroyed by empire after empire, and we came back to the country that we have been in for 3,500 years. It's the opposite of colonization. Guys, what is under the Al-Aqsa Mosque? That's everything you need to know, okay? The ruins of the Second Temple are under the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which means A, our first temple was destroyed. B, our second temple was destroyed. C, the colonizers built their mosque on top of our temple in order to shame us. Also, I don't have a problem with legitimate criticism of the government. And by the way, you're saying government, IDF and government are not the same thing, because then you said raising Gaza. But if they don't have informed information, they're just like, oh, Bibi's just too far right. Why? Do you guys know how many civilian casualties there were in the U.S. War on Terror? No. You want to know why? Because no one measures that in any war that doesn't involve Israel. The answer, by the way, is 440,000. And no one cared. Criticizing Israel is not anti-Semitic, but double standards are. So if they accuse Israel of anything that they would not accuse any other nation of, that is anti-Semitic. By the way, the fact that the world is obsessed with tiny little Israel in an existential war is anti-Semitic in and of itself. Name one other war ever, go ahead and think as hard as you want, where the free world decided the good guys were the terrorists who massacred 1,200 people, raped the women, kidnapped the grandparents, beheaded the babies, tied families together and burned them alive. The list goes on, and these are the good guys. That is anti-Semitic because it has never happened before. Name a war where the U.S. government and any government, all governments in the Western world, supported both sides. It doesn't exist. Guys, you have to understand how twisted this war, and when I say the war on Israel, I'm not just talking about the kinetic war. I'm talking about the propaganda war really is and how easily people are brainwashed. If anybody came here today using navigation, for example, because we don't think anymore, and by the way, I use navigation too, I'm not knocking navigation, we are no longer trained to think. We are trained to be programmed, and people are being programmed. So question, get into the sticks, educate yourself, ask them why. Destroying Gaza is not enough. Why are we there? Why are they using their people as human shields? Why are they hiding underground? Why do we have to destroy what's on top? Because they're hiding what they are hiding underneath. And by the way, this war would have ended on October 7th if the hostages were released and Hamas laid down their arms. This is not on Israel.
I was going to ask about re-educating or educating young people. The left,
yeah.
When I grew up,
yeah.
The left is now different than the left today.
Yeah. I'm gonna address that, and then we're gonna get back to her questions, and then we'll open it up to question and answer because I know that.
Are you doing anything, or you're?
We're actually addressing that, but I'll jump ahead a little bit because this is so important. First of all, guys. Agency. Do you know what agency means? It means you need to take responsibility for yourselves. If you have children or you have grandchildren who are against the Jews, who are in the Jewish Voice for Peace or any of these things, this is not about allowing your children to think freely. We as parents and grandparents have got to teach our children. That's the first thing, because they're being programmed. They're not being taught to think critically. That's number one. Let's talk about the left. We were talking last night, actually, about, I had a Yoga War episode with a woman named Brandi Shufatinsky, okay? She happens to be black and Jewish, and she works against the ethnic studies curriculum. Now, the ethnic studies curriculum is very big in California right now, but I know what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. In case you don't know, what happens in California takes over the whole country, okay? So we're the bellwether, okay? We have what's called ethnic studies. It sounds like this nice, warm, fuzzy thing. It's not. Ethnic studies is about to become mandatory in California. Ethnic studies is about teaching children, not about their history, that would be history class. It's about their differences and about splitting every single group into oppressed or oppressor. They'll have like a nice little mandala and you color it in to see how much of an oppressor you are. And the goal is a race to the bottom, is the more you're a victim, the more oppressed classes that you are a part of, the less agency you have, the more you're allowed to resist. The worst people on earth are white people, but the worst people are the hyper-white people, which are the Jews, okay? The left literally teaches that the biggest oppressors on earth, the biggest oppressor class, this is a Marxist theology, which is ethnic studies is based on Marxism, says that is the Jews are the ultimate oppressor class. And therefore, anything against the Jews is justified resistance. This is why there are encampments. And by the way, we look at these college kids and say, what happened to our college kids? It's not what happened to our college kids. It's what they're teaching them woke baby in preschool. It's what they're teaching them, you could tell them, but two horrifying stories that happened to her son's friend you'd think came straight out of Nazi Germany. These kids don't get it from nowhere, okay? The leftist ideology is so hardcore against Israel, and I'm not saying this as a political statement. I'm an independent, I'm a registered independent. I'm neither Democrat nor Republican. I vote for whoever supports the Jewish state the best. That's my be all and end all. But the leftist Marxist ideology, and by the way, guys, I'm gonna say a sentence and let's see who could finish this one. What starts with the Jews?
Doesn't end with the Jews.
It never ends with the Jews.
That's how the left failed. That was the failure.
Well, they're rising again, thanks to social media. But go look at the rallies. They're not just burning Israeli flags. They're burning U.S. flags.
Yeah.
They're burning the British flag. They're burning the French flag. And everybody is cheering them on. Guys, we're watching the decline of Western civilization. I hate to be alarmist, but here's the truth.
It is what it is. It's...
Every nation that has risen against the Jews in history has wound up in the dustbin of history. Ironically, there's a good chance that Israel is going to be the last democratic nation on earth in the end.
So I know that you go to Israel twice a year.
Two or three, yeah.
Or more. Your sister lives in Israel. You are seriously considering making Aliyah. And there's just been a huge surge in people making Aliyah from around the world. I think almost 40,000 since October 7th. So in a year and a half, that's a huge number. And why should people be visiting Israel right now when the war is literally still going on?
Right. And so there's two questions in there, which is visiting and Aliyah. And guys, I want to start with the Aliyah question because, yes, it's a year and a half, but what a year and a half.
Yeah.
Guys, think about this.
Does anyone not know what it is to make Aliyah?
Sorry. To make Aliyah means to move to Israel. It literally means to go up, but it means to move to Israel. Think about this. Jews in the world today feel safer in Israel in the middle of a war than they do in London or Sydney or New York, okay, or Paris. That is what is so scary about what we're witnessing. Now, visiting Israel again, it's bearing testament, okay? It's seeing it versus going to visit memorials, okay, or museums, which are great. And I think we should be going to the memorials and going to the museums. But, for example, Be'eri is being rebuilt, okay? But obviously you can't go last year because last year already happened. I don't know how much has been rebuilt already, but to be able to walk through the rubble and see it. And by the way, let me just flip this for 1 second on why anybody should visit Israel ever. And it's the flip side of the same thing, which is that the first time I went to Israel, I sort of felt like the Torah was allegory, right? Like these are really good stories with lessons and it's, you know, it's good and it's Jewish, it's the things. And then you go to Israel and you're like, and this is where it actually happened. Like, there's Har Sinai. That's where the Torah came from. And there's the temple, and there's this, and so it's this unbelievable awakening of history. So to be able to go there in real time, like the they have, do you guys know about the car graveyard? Okay, so they have over 2,000 cars that were abandoned, destroyed, etc. on 10/7 on the killing roads and blah blah, and they have them all in like a junkyard basically. The ones that were smashed because they can't be used, and they're smashed, and there's like just a huge wall of them, and they're rusty and they're, you know, whatever. So that's something you could see now. You could see the ambulances that were destroyed. You just can't even fathom what you're looking at, but they can't, they're, in fact, the state of Israel right now is deciding, like, can they keep this graveyard, this car graveyard, because cars are gonna fall apart, and it's a big lot, and all the things. But, so going now is important to bear testament, but also the Israeli people really appreciate it. They are feeling so alienated right now, and they're used to it, so they could deal with it. But I'm telling you, I was there twice last year, I'm going next month. When you're walking around, they're like, oh, you're from America, especially because hopefully when you go volunteer, they need volunteers right now, and you're, oh yeah, you know, I'm here to volunteer, and everybody is like, wow, thank you so much. I'm like, really? Because like, we're all here to volunteer, and they're so appreciative, and they need to know that the whole world is not against them. When they're seeing Jews, it makes me cringe to call them Jews, but people who claim to be Jews, who are screaming on our campuses to revolutionize the Intifada, like, are you kidding me? So if you can get there, get there. The funny thing is, my sister, when I went, she's like, oh, it makes me so, my sister lives in Tel Aviv. She's been there for 15 years. She's like, when I hear all the jets all the time, it gives me anxiety. I'm like, it makes me feel so calm that I know that the IDF is protecting me 24/7, that I love Israel, and I feel safe here. And I have to be honest, in America right now and in the world, I basically quit my yoga job because I can't face up to people who want to see me dead. It's not worth it to me. So where's my soul? I love America, guys. I cry at the national anthem. Don't get me wrong. This is the greatest nation that has ever lived in the history of mankind. Period. My soul lives in Israel, and being here and being so far and feeling so helpless, not that I could like help Israel when I move there, but it feels like I have been separated from we talked about the soul, and I feel disconnected from my soul that's stuck there right now.
No, I was just gonna say, you're a really good speaker. You need to speak to the young people today.
Are some of us here?
No, but I know high school campuses, and yeah, they need to have more people like you.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, let's
where do you see the future of the Jewish people in like 10 years? So it's, you know, 2035.
Okay, this is not gonna put smiles on your faces, guys. So I think in 10 years, there's going to be no Jews left in Europe, none. I think there will be very few Jews left in South America. I think there will be probably a fairly strong diaspora still here in America.
I think because they're going to move, not because they're going to be murdered.
We're going to be in, everyone's going to Israel. That's what I think. I think in 10 years, almost every Jew will live in Israel because it's going to be the only place that you're safe. I'm sure you guys are aware of what just happened in New York. And by the way, none of us lives in New York. A lot of us have family in New York. I'll tell you what happened. But you can still be an activist from Las Vegas, okay? talk to me after. I'll tell you how you could get involved. So last week, New York voted as their Democratic candidate for mayor, a literal jihadi who calls for from the river to the sea. He's all, huh?
No.
Mom Donnie.
Yeah.
He also happens to be a complete socialist, and that's not irrelevant, guys. Again, remember what I said about the ethnic studies? It's based in Marxism. This is where it starts. Marxism is about tearing down society, right? And also getting rid of the individual, okay? So they want a communal, steal from the rich, feed the poor. But he is an unapologetic anti-Semite, rabid, and it's no coincidence that that's where Columbia University and CUNY and all the schools that have come out so violently, NYU. I'm with you. I'm not as worried about our generation as I am very, very, very worried about our next generation. Now, this is why my personal, now, I actually, there's a guy named David Bernstein. There's a lot of guys named David Bernstein. In fact, he has to go by David L. Bernstein because there's actually another guy in his field named David Bernstein. And he wrote a book called Woke Anti-Semitism. Okay, and it's all about, in fact, he works with Brandi Shuvatinsky, or she works with him, whatever, at an organization called NAVI. He's been on my show twice. They're really, really enjoyable discussions, by the way, because he is like just a ray of light and a teddy bear, like put together, and a guy who's against anti-Semitism. And talking to him is just so pleasant, even when we're talking about the end of the world. But for the second show, I had approached him in December with a premise. And my premise was that I bet that anti-Semitism is going to get worse even as the war winds down. And I asked him if he would come back on my show to discuss this thesis. He's a very, very positive person. I'm not going to say I'm a negative person, but I'm maybe a little more... not pessimistic, realistic about like the way I look at things. I'd like to see the silver lining, but I tend to be a little too focused on the cloud. Anyway, as it turns out, he wound up, because I have to book the shows a while in advance, he wound up coming on my show the week of the ceasefire started in January. So, what happened when the ceasefire started? Did the kids on the campus suddenly start saying, yes, peace, this is what we want? Or did they double down on the intifada? Here's what is scary. Students for Justice in Palestine, if you don't know, on Columbia, was it Columbia or Harvard, one of the two, turned on their Instagram that had been latent for years, 3 minutes before the massacre on 10/7. Okay?
Yeah.
They knew it was coming. Here's what you have to understand. You think that this war was about 10/7 or even killing as many Jews as possible? No. It was about destroying the Jewish state and the Jewish people. The propaganda war was in place before that gate was broken into. And by the way, if you go to Bailey, you could see the gate. It's right there. Like, here's a house, there's the gate that they broke into from Gaza. Okay, again, it's the things that you've got to see to believe. The intention was always, always to alienate the Jewish people. They knew. I know that for a lot of people, this is the first rodeo. Guys, this started in 2014 when the internet went really crazy at the same time as a war with Gaza. That they found out that if they provoke the IDF enough, because Israel will take a lot before they fight back, they know that the second Israel fights back, the world will turn on Israel like clockwork. This isn't new. They knew that even if they made the most horrifying, barbaric, sadistic massacre known to modern man in the Western world, even then, the world was going to turn on the Jews, and they were right. this was the plan all along, and here's the bigger problem. It's got two words that we all know, social media. This is why this is not gonna stop, okay? When this war ends, mark my words, it is not gonna be the end of the anti-Semitism. They're gonna ramp it up and up and up until they delegitimize and alienate all Jews in every place. By the way,
on a really, really positive note,
if they get all Jews to Israel and Iran gets the bomb, I'm not gonna finish that sentence. I hope I'm wrong. I don't usually hope I'm wrong, but I pray that I'm wrong. I think in 10 years, almost every Jew will be in Israel, except for a few left in America.
They're all gonna be in Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas.
I mean, I was kind of hoping that the pendulum would start to swing the other way, and we are just riding out the wave right now.
Again, I hope I'm wrong, but the problem is social media.
Yeah.
The problem is anonymity. Okay?
Right.
The things that people write to me on a daily basis, I wouldn't say to Hitler. I'm not kidding. I would not say it to Hitler.
You wouldn't be able to say it.
Okay. The emboldenment, the normalization that good people of the world literally now believe that anti-Semitism is justice. I don't see how this pendulum swings. I put all politics aside. Trump is the best friend Israel has ever had and the best friend the Jews have ever had, but you can't force someone to stop hating.
Well, on a positive note, Jewish enrollment for day school across the country has gone up significantly since October 7th. I think it's because they want their kids to feel safe and not have the anti-Semitic bullying happen. That could happen at a public school or where there's more non-Jews than Jews. And a lot of Israelis have moved here for the war, and so they're sending their kids to Jewish day school. And when you interviewed Brandi Hufatinsky, she talked about a little bit about that as well, because what they're teaching in public schools, or not teaching, which is horrible because they don't want to, I don't know, step on anyone's toes. I think that's a positive thing is where I'm getting at. So like hopefully they're enrolling in Sunday school, or okay, maybe we will join a temple, or, you know.
It is. There is no question that the best thing to come out of this horrible situation, I hate to say it, is that Jews are finding themselves again.
Yeah.
But I can't emphasize enough how important a Jewish education is. I mean, I'm a product of the Jewish education system. And I learned to love Judaism at a very, very early age because a Jewish education is about love of our nation. And I think that we live in a Christian nation. I don't have a problem with that. This America, for all intents and purposes, I mean, we're not a Christian nation, but you know, we're mostly Christian. And for most Jewish children, I'm not saying to be politically correct, people, your Jewish education stops at your bat mitzvah. But for my Christian friends, they go to Bible study every week, even into their 80s, 90s. But we're not, as a Jewish community, unfortunately, and certainly there are outliers, we are not teaching our children to love Israel the way that I was taught to love Israel in that generation. And it's so important in our Jewish day schools but the problem with Jewish day schools is they're so expensive.
Yeah.
In America, in LA, you're talking $50,000 to $80,000 per child per year. So what's the answer? Well, philanthropists,
Like a joint youth group?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about an act, but youth group too, yeah. Yes. But philanthropists need to be thinking more about our schools. Adelson was a huge believer. Ron Lauder, huge believer in education. We have to support Israel, but if you want it, it's funny because you guys know about Tikkun Olam, I'm sure, right? Mm-hmm. To heal the world, and this is the Reform motto. But in the Torah, it says, before you heal those who are far, you first have to heal those who are close. Okay? It's the airplane thing. I don't need to.
Yeah.
So you start with your own community because and also not just on the soul level, as I was talking about in the yoga, but also just Am Yisrael is not just the people in Israel. Okay? It's every Jew. And it's our children. And our children, I believe the children are. No, I do. I think about that every day. The children are our future. And it scares me when I see the children today who are either uninformed or afraid, for the most part, to speak up for themselves because they just don't have the ammunition.
I don't know if you guys heard about, maybe you heard about the school in LA, Kadima, who lost its funding. For some investor that's a Jewish school. And some of the Jewish influencers were asking the community to kind of donate to help that school keep going. I don't know if you're
familiar. No, I
don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So some of the big Jewish influencers that we know were asking for funding because they were going to cut the school completely.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't happen. Huh? It didn't happen, though, did it?
I'm not sure. They had to get $1 million in like a very short amount of time. Okay.
But the youth groups also, I mean, my nephew, I have four nephews, but I have one nephew who decided to stay in youth group all the way through high school. And I'm smiling because he is like the coolest kid you will ever meet. I mean, he was like, you know, he was student athlete of the year for like his league. He's like gorgeous. He's brilliant, he's an athlete, all the girls, everybody loves him. Like, he's not some dork. And he decided that, like, every, whatever, Tuesday and Sunday, he was going to go to youth group. And he didn't have to after 13. Yeah. And none of my other niece and nephews chose to. But he, now, he's, like, in a band, a pretty successful band for what he is. He's at the Troubadour this week. He wears a huge Jewish star. And he's just like, this is me. But he didn't go to Jewish school other than Chabad for preschool, which is the best time to plant the seeds is preschool. But he grew up such a proud Jew, and he pledged AE Pi. He could have gone into any fraternity, and he chose AE Pi. So it does matter.
It does. So I'm going to read it so I don't say it wrong. When you interviewed Doron Kitar.
Did I say that right?
Doron Kitar. Uh-huh. You mentioned a cool Star Wars reference in that podcast episode. Can you elaborate?
Okay, so Doron is an IDF reservist, and he also has a podcast. And he's very faith-based in his IDF action. In that, you know, there's a code of conduct, a Jewish code of conduct that these soldiers are, they carry a little like laminated card, and so that's who Doron is in a short. But the analogy that I was making, and I brought it up in that show because he made the same analogy to Star Wars, is, you know, so I'm of the Star Wars generation. I was born in the early 71. So, like, I grew up with all of that. And when you look at Star Wars, is there any question who's the good guy and the bad guy? No. They're even called the dark side and the Jedi's, whatever, the light side, whatever. Okay? It's so obvious. Okay, so here's the second question. When Luke Skywalker, or whomever, whatever, one of his friends, kills 50,000 stormtroopers, is that disproportionate force, or does everybody cheer for the good guy? Where's the disconnect? Why don't people understand, as Sam Harris, brilliant Sam Harris, I don't agree with 90% of his politics, but his Israel stuff is spot on, He has a podcast called The Bright Line Between Good and Evil that I recommend everybody listen to, but not a podcast, podcast episode. But it is, it's such a bright line. How are people missing it? How are people not understanding who are the good guys and who are the bad guys in this fight? But
one second, I want, so, but what she was more amused about was my sock story. And again, like this is, it's not irrelevant. We have to understand that there are certain societal influences that are really nefarious right now. That I was telling her, it was probably about, I don't know, I'm trying to think, because I remember it was shortly before I went to Milan for the first time, so it was probably about 15, maybe years ago or something. And I bought a pack of Star Wars socks. I know this sounds funny, but I like socks. And like I'm looking through them, and there's like, oh, Yoda, oh, Princess Leia, oh, you know, Luke Skywalker. And then there's one, and it's Darth Vader, but it's not just Darth Vader. That would be fine. I don't care if it's Darth Vader. But it said on the socks, and I was so confounded, it said, I love the dark side. And I'm like, how did, like, who put this, like, who thought this was, and by the way, none of the other ones said, I love Yoda, or I love Luke Skywalker. It was like, I love the dark side. And I remember at the moment thinking, there's something very wrong that they think that, because they're child socks, obviously, that there's some child, that this is a good message for them to be projecting onto the world. Again, that was around the time when social media was becoming very big, and this thread of aggrandizing evil. Joker, which by the way, I think is probably the best movie I've ever seen in my life. It's brilliant, but we're living it. If you guys haven't seen Joker, that end scene, compare it to downtown LA last week, and you won't see the difference. We have this new vigilante concept of the only way to get what you want in the world is to destroy and to kill and to vandalize and to target other people, and it's dangerous. We need to remember who the good guys and who the bad guys are. It's so obvious.
Should be, yes.
It should be.
What? This is how you end all of your podcasts, so I'm going to ask, because, and then we'll wrap it up. What does Am Yisrael Chai mean to you?
So,
tables are turned.
I ask everybody this because these are three words that, I mean, it makes me tear up to even think about. I want to just start by saying that own it. You are Am Yisrael. Okay? That Am Yisrael is the people of Israel. It's not just the people in Israel. So that's the first thing we have to remember. Chai, as we know, is life. Now, why are the three most important words in the you know, non-liturgical Hebrew dictionary, Am Yisrael Chai? Because we are the nation, we are Israel, and more than anything, we love, we respect life. And more importantly, we live. Think of what we have been through. Am Yisrael Chai, guys, is a little bit of an F you to the world. They've tried to destroy us over and over again. You could say, who are they? I can't even answer it because there have been so many of them. Through it all, we live. So, Am Yisrael Chai, carry that in your heart always. We live now and we do live forever.
That's beautiful. So to summarize the last 50 minutes, there are five things that we can do right now to help flip the narrative, so to speak. One is represent. So we're all wearing the numbers, 632. It's been that many days since October 7th. I put that on my Instagram bubble every single day. Nice. On all of my accounts. And if somebody doesn't know what it is, I hope they would ask, and then they're reminded, oh, wow, there's still people underground for that many days. Like, that's insane. Stephanie puts it at the top of her emails every Friday. I love it. So wear this the rest of the day and see if anyone asks you and educate them. Hopefully you put a yellow ribbon on your hat at the hat bar or a Jewish star, and you can wear that proudly. Wear your dog chain, blue square.
I never leave my house ever without, so this, I was telling her, I love, because it is fading and she got it instantly, that that's how long they've been in, that this used to be black and now it's, oh, it's not that, I mean, it's intelligible, but I wear this 24/7 no matter what. I always either have my tags with the ribbon, with the Jewish star, or oddly enough, in my temple, before, it, like literally on day one, they were handing out blue ribbons. The yellow ribbon didn't even exist yet. I wear the blue ribbon a lot because, for me, it's about the hostages, but it's also about anti-Semitism, and it's also about Israel, and it's also about the Jewish people, and it's all the things. But I also encourage you guys, not only get the dog tag, not only wear it all the time, but get the big one, okay? It's not meant to be dainty. It's meant so people will ask questions. And by the way, the most beautiful thing about this, I don't know how many people here speak Hebrew, but it says, Halo Shalanu Shavui Me'aza, okay? It says, I'm going to translate it, but does anybody want to try to translate it first? Because it's interesting, because it's not what you probably think.
My heart is held captive in Gaza.
Close. You got the held captive in Gaza. Sorry, in Hebrew it's Gaza. But here's what's interesting, guys. It says Halev. What's Halev?
The heart.
Okay, that's singular. Shelanu. What's Shelanu? Of ours. It doesn't say our hearts, it says our heart is held captive in Gaza. I've never talked to a single person who like read it closely enough. It's only four words to notice that. But again, Am Yisrael, we have one heart. But represent, wear the tags, wear the ribbons, do the thing.
And the blue square is really supposed to be about anti-Semitism, but their latest, I feel like, commercials have been just about any minority. Yep. So I don't know when that switch happened, but right. I mean, if anybody,
that Super Bowl commercial walks up, travesty.
Yeah, if anybody walks up to my house, you will immediately see an Israeli flag on my door, a mezuzah that I got in Israel that's huge, and a mat that says Shalom. So I'm not afraid. I mean, I do. Oh, I was like, where? There's someone else here on my street, but they left. I do live in a gated neighborhood, but I think it's like, if we hide who we are, they want. And I don't, and we should feel comfortable wearing whatever we want. And yes, as long as we represent ourselves as kind people, then hopefully we can change their minds that we are kind people. So
I'm that's the only one in my building in Brentwood who has a mezuzah on her door. Believe me, I know the people in my building. Yeah. I'm by far not the only Jewish person.
Did anybody actually take it down?
No, nobody's taken it down. They just don't care enough. It's not because of 10/7. So
they never had
one. Never had one. But again, like, we need, now is the time that we need to re-own who we are and be proud of who we are, because we have a lot to be proud of, and they're trying to shame us. They're trying to belittle us. Everything about this is about dehumanization. If you listen, I actually have, like, literally America's number one Holocaust expert on my show twice, and that's what he said. The Holocaust was about dehumanization. Because once you turn someone into nothing more than a rat, they're a lot easier to kill.
So number one, represent. Number two, donate money to the Jewish Federation or other reputable organizations that you know are supporting the important causes.
Okay, so I have to talk to this also. First of all, in the Torah, it says, how much of your money do you give?
10%.
10%. you should always be giving 10% of your money to charity. That means if you earned $100 this year, you only have to give $10. And if you earned $100 million and you say, but $10 million is too much, you still got $90 million. Everybody needs to give 10%. This is a commitment. Guys, I have been living basically on savings for a year and a half, and I'm still sending all my money to Israel because there will be a time and a place for me to rebuild my business. This isn't the time, this isn't the place, and it may not be yoga, but I know that there's someone who needs it more than I do, and there always is. Please, if you are afraid to be generous with your money, before you write the check and you say, oh, I can only give $100, ask yourself, is it that you can't afford it, or is that you don't value it? If you're willing to spend $1,000 a month on your car, you can give $500 a month to Israel. Fill in the blanks. But for those of you who don't have a lot of money and still want to support Israel, buy Israel bonds. It's not a donation. Okay, it's like putting money in a bank account. It's like buying a CD. A bond means you get back that money with returns. So buy Israel bonds. If you don't have a lot, if you don't have a lot to give, it's a nice investment, the best investment. You want to know something else? You can give an Israel bond as a donation. Then you get the tax write-off because it's a donation. But it also tells the organization that you're supporting them because you believe in Jewish values. If you have problems with your alma mater, I sure as hell do, say, if you want my money, here's an Israel bond. Either you support the state of Israel and accept it, or Israel keeps the money. That's your choice.
I like that. Is anyone familiar with the Israel bonds?
No.
I could talk to you after about Israel.
Okay. All right. So one, represent. Number two, donate. Number three, like, follow, share, and subscribe to the positive Jewish influencers because they are out there. And like I said before, we are losing the PR war. So every like helps boost it, maybe comment, share it, all those things. It's super important because we are so far behind on this PR war. It's ridiculous. So everything counts.
Yeah, hold on. Every time I say this, 99% of people I talk to say, well, my voice doesn't matter. One voice doesn't matter. You want to know the answer? When millions of people say their voice doesn't matter, and instead they decide their voice does matter, that's when we make a difference. And I encourage you to follow everybody who you see or just like. It doesn't have to be Noah Tishby or Michael Rappaport. Support the smaller people because that's how we all get a bigger voice.
Read books by Noah Tishby, educate yourself and other authors, and then if you see something, say something. You have to report it because there's statistics that you read that there's a rise in anti this and that. Well, how do they know if we don't report it? So you have to be reporting it. Visit Israel, we covered that, and Jewish joy is resistance. So celebrate, like go to the bar mitzvah, go to the Jewish wedding, post pictures being happy. The day after Israel was bombed, there were people were in Tel Aviv playing beach volleyball as a way to prove that, you know, they are strong.
We are the most resilient nation on earth. There's an old, I think it's Aztec saying that I loved. It says, they thought they could bury us. They didn't know we were seeds. That's Israel. Good. And this is why people resent us. The more we've been oppressed, the higher we have risen from the ashes. Mm-hmm. We always will, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's something to be extraordinarily proud of. So.